Montana considers scaling back its sage-grouse hunt. That's our top story tonight on Montana Evening Edition. Good evening, I'm Conrad Scheid.
And I'm Corin Cates-Carney. The White House singles out a regional oil patch as part of its 2014 National Drug Control Strategy. And Yellowstone Public Radio's Jackie Yamanaka takes us to a healthcare summit in which the Affordable Care Act is discussed.
The Fish and Wildlife Commission votes tomorrow on the plan to close hunting in all or part of 32 counties across northern, eastern, and southern Montana. That would leave a swath of 13 counties across the central part of the state and six southwestern counties open from September 1st through September 30th. This spring's count of birds on sage-grouse breeding grounds was the lowest since 1980. The federal government is considering listing it as a threatened or endangered species next year. Fish, Wildlife, and Parks initially proposed canceling the 2014 hunt, but reconsidered after pushback from hunters and analyzing the final population data. Hunters say the population declines are largely driven by loss of habitat, not hunting.
In other news from around the state, the White House has singled out the oil patch of northwestern North Dakota and northeastern Montana as part of its 2014 National Drug Control Strategy. The report released today says dramatic increase in crime in the Bakken oil-producing region has overwhelmed state, local, and tribal agencies working with limited resources. The document says the FBI and other federal agencies will continue to work with state and local police on law enforcement, quality of life, women's safety, and tribal issues in oil country. North Dakota Attorney General Wayne Stengem says it's appropriate to be listed in the report because drug crimes in the state area increased nearly 20% in the last year. Stengem says he's preparing a budget for the next legislature that includes a robust oil patch crime initiative.
A Billings businessman who proposed a measure that would have effectively overturned Montana's medical marijuana law says he doesn't think it qualified for the November ballot. Steve Zabawa tells Lee Newspapers of Montana that the initiative's backers likely didn't gather enough signatures. The proposal sought to change state law to say any Schedule I drug in the Federal Controlled Substances Act, quote, may not be legally possessed, received, transferred, manufactured, cultivated, trafficked, transported, or used in Montana, end quote. Montana voters approved the use of marijuana for medical purposes in 2004. Backers of Initiative 174 needed to obtain the signatures of at least 24,175 voters by June 20th. That's including 5% of voters in at least 34 of the state's 100 House districts. An official tally won't be available until later this month.
There won't be a citizen ballot initiative in Montana's general election for the first time in more than 40 years. Measures from a dozen sponsors didn't qualify after being cleared for signature gathering. Secretary of State spokeswoman Terry McCoy says there hasn't been a general election ballot without a citizen initiative since the current Montana Constitution was adopted in 1972. Secretary of State Linda McCullough says the failure to obtain enough signatures could be due to fewer people casting ballots at the polls, where those collecting signatures often find success. The official tally will be available later this month.
The president and CEO of a company that helps improve the healthcare industry says while Obamacare is here to stay, it isn't the fix-all for the problems in the healthcare industry. Susan DeVore spoke at the Big Sky Business Healthcare Summit taking place today and tomorrow in Billings. Jackie Yamanaka reports.
DeVore says people in healthcare often talk about the industry as the tests, the procedures, or the services that government or insurance companies reimburse. In other words, healthcare as a noun. She says healthcare of the future treats it as a verb.
Tomorrow's system is not only going to be about making sick people better, but it's also going to be about keeping whole populations healthy.
DeVore says a federal Affordable Care Act, commonly known as Obamacare, is moving toward that. But she says there remains an economic paradox. Medicare and in turn private insurance pays hospitals and providers largely under the fee-for-service system. So the more procedures a provider does, the more they get paid.
And doctors say, I feel like I'm practicing insurance instead of medicine.
That's because they and their staffs were so focused on all of the regulatory and administrative requirements. And providers expressed frustration that while each patient gets the same quality of care, the amount of money they receive from insurance, whether from the government or private insurance companies, can vary widely.
So our conclusion is it's a bureaucratic, politicized, micromanaged system, and it sets up competing interests that directly lead to waste, inefficiency, and less than optimal outcomes.
Divorce is now under Obamacare. There are new incentives for hospitals and providers to keep patients from being readmitted to the hospital or emergency room, for example. But she says the federal government can't transform health care by itself.
I'm not sure health plans or insurance companies alone can fix the problems in health care. Nationally, I think it's going to take the collaborative power of providers together with patients and consumers to actually change the course that we're on for health care.
She says that includes giving patients access to their health records, perhaps giving consumers more choices when it comes to choosing their insurance policies, as well as innovations like activity trackers, apps, to telemedicine. DeVore is just one over a dozen speakers talking about the business and economics of healthcare. Jackie Yamanaka, YPR News, Billings.
The Polson City Commission has proposed tripling the city's water and sewer rates to pay for a $19 million wastewater and sewage treatment plant needed to meet federal discharge regulations that take effect in 2018. The Missoulian reports it was standing room only for Monday's commission meeting, at which the new rates were discussed. Residences that use less than 5,000 gallons of water pay about $30 monthly for water and sewer. The proposed rates for the same usage would be in the $90 range. Many at the meeting wanted to know how the city expected young families, those on fixed incomes, landlords, and businesses to pay three times their current water and sewer rates starting in August. Commissioners tabled the final reading of the proposal and will take it up again on July 21st.
Montana State Parks says the 2014 through 2018 State Outdoor Recreation Plan is now available online. It's called Creating a Vibrant Future for Montana's Outdoor Recreation Heritage, and it serves as a roadmap for the next 4 years of public recreation planning in Montana. State Park officials say the plan was developed through a collaborative process involving federal, state, and local outdoor recreation providers, land managers, and other partners. State Park spokeswoman Betsy Kirkaby says the plan gives everyone a better idea of what the state's recreation needs are.
What is the public use for our recreation and outdoor spaces? Where are the needs for improved facilities? What kind of facilities do people want as far as like playgrounds, parks, aquatic facilities? And so this gives us an idea of where we're at and where we need to take things over the next 4 years.
Kirkaby adds creation of the Montana Outdoor Recreation Plan is a requirement for the state to receive funding from the Federal Land and Water Conservation Fund.
We administer a grant program for the LWF or CF, and different areas, communities, groups will apply for grants, and we give that money out. And it might be for a new bathroom facility at a soccer field or playground equipment. It might be a swimming pool, some kind of an aquatic facility, hiking trails. There's a host of things that can be funded by it. The key is it's outdoor lands and outdoor recreation.
Montana has been awarded over $409,000 in the LWCF funds for 2015. To find out more, visit stateparks.mt.gov and click on the News tab on the right-hand side of the homepage.
A fishing advocacy group is offering a $10,000 reward for information on individuals suspected of illegally stocking non-native fish in several Montana lakes. Montana Trout Unlimited announced the reward today for information leading to those responsible for planting three different species of fish: northern pike in Lake Mary Ronan, smallmouth bass in Seeley Lake, and walleye in Noxon Reservoir. Conservation Director Mark Aguinas says these fish don't have the ability to coexist with the native fish already inhabiting those waters.
Let's say I introduce northern pike into a particular water body. The northern pike will go in and they'll eat all of the fish that are there, and then all of a sudden it gets to the point where the northern pike don't have anything to eat, and so you end up with these really, you know, long, snaky, underweight northern pike. So the person that was hoping to catch northern pike and have a robust pike fishery, all of a sudden they don't have that opportunity that they were looking to have, not to mention all of the other fish species are now gone because the northern pike had gone through and eaten all the other fish.
Agnes says they've set up their $10,000 bounty through Montana Fish, Wildlife, and Parks TIP Mont program, which allows people to report possible crimes on wildlife and state lands.
And then it goes straight into Montana FWP's Enforcement Division, and they you know, they go through the process of you know, investigating and hopefully arresting and convicting perpetrators.
Invasive species of fish have been a problem in Montana Lake since the 1980s, but after northern pike were found in Lake Mary Ronan last week, Agnes says something more needed to be done.
I mean, it is a lot of money, and it is something that we're taking very seriously, and it's coming straight out of our general operating budget. And if we can actually arrest and convict somebody responsible for this irresponsible behavior, we feel like it's a wise investment.
Officials found smallmouth bass in Seeley Lake last fall and walleye in Noxon Reservoir in 2012.
A 42-year-old woman who pleaded guilty to robbing casinos in Billings last October to raise bail money for a man facing several felony charges has been sentenced to 20 years in prison. District Judge Russell Fagg sentenced Karen K. Dameron on Tuesday. She pleaded guilty in May to 3 counts of robbery and 2 counts of attempted robbery, giving her a total of 11 felony convictions. Charging documents say Dameron robbed or tried to rob 5 casinos last October 18th and 19th while trying to raise bail money for 23-year-old James Vincent Craycraft. Fagg ordered Dameron to pay more than $4,000 in restitution. Craycraft was sentenced in June to 10 years with the Department of Corrections for leading officers on high-speed chases in stolen vehicles.
A former juvenile probation officer in North Central Montana has pleaded not guilty to raping the mother of a juvenile he was supervising. Stephen David Mills entered the plea Monday in district court in Havre and is free after posting a $20,000 bond. District Judge Catherine Vitigara, who appeared via video from Sydney, scheduled the December 8th trial date. Attorney General's office is handling the prosecution. The woman told investigators Mills offered her a ride to her car after she got into a fight in a Havre bar, but he instead took her to his house and forced her to perform a sexual act. She said she was able to call a friend to pick her up after it appeared Mills had passed out. Court records say Mills denied leaving the bar with the woman, taking her to his house and having a sexual relationship with her. Prosecutors say DNA evidence was taken from the woman matched Mills' DNA profile. Mills, who was 48 at the time he was arrested, told investigators he was the probation officer of the woman's son. He said the boy had an upcoming hearing at which it was being recommended he would be placed outside the home. Mills' attorney, Jeremy Yellen, did not immediately return a phone call from the Associated Press today seeking comment. Mills no longer works as a juvenile probation officer. He was initially placed on paid administrative leave, and his last day of employment was on June 25th.
In tonight's forecast, first a quick roundup of current temperatures. In Wisdom, it's 73 degrees. In Helena, it's 86 degrees. In Troy, it's 92. In St. Regis, it's 91. And in Victor, it's 80 degrees. West of the Divide tonight, expect partly cloudy skies with scattered showers and thunderstorms, lows in the mid-40s to lower 50s. Tomorrow will be mostly sunny with highs in the mid-80s to lower 90s. Tonight in central Montana, it's partly cloudy with some isolated showers and thunderstorms, lows 55 to 65. Thursday looks sunny with highs in the 80s. And in southwest Montana tonight, it's mostly cloudy. Expect scattered showers and thunderstorms in the evening and lows in the 50s. Thursday should be partly cloudy. There's a slight chance of showers and thunderstorms through the day with highs in the low 80s. And now for the editorial comments of Susan Kohler.
Good evening. This is Susan Kohler, CEO of Missoula Aging Services, the area agency on aging for Missoula and Ravalli counties. Tonight, I'd like to talk about livable communities and how meeting the needs of the older population often results in meeting the needs of other age groups. I will also mention the challenges many rural communities face in meeting the criteria and how they might deal with the barriers. According to AARP, a livable community is safe and secure and provides affordable and appropriate housing. It also has adequate transportation and supportive community features and services. Once in place, these resources enhance personal independence, allow residents to age in place, and foster engagement by residents in the community's civic, economic, and social life. I believe the city of Missoula has made incredible strides towards being a livable community for several reasons. One is because we are an urban area with more resources than other non-urban communities. Another is that Missoula also tends to be progressive. Finally, as an urban area, many of our government entities are required to create livable community plans. Outside the urban areas, there are many challenges to creating a livable community in which a person can age in place. These include access to health care, shopping, supportive services, and transportation. As Montana's population ages, the importance of community features that promote physical independence and enhance opportunities for community engagement for all residents becomes more apparent. Despite these realities, there are steps communities can take to improve their livability if everyone agrees to the concept and works together with the resources that are available. Technological advances may help with access to health care. Looking at the physical design of workplaces, communities, and facilities can greatly enhance individual independence, dignity, and choice. The availability of accessible features, facilities, housing, road design, walkability, transportation, and supportive services influences not only whether a person can remain in the community, but also the types of activities in which someone can participate. Proper land use planning and design are critical to developing livable communities. The trend in urban areas is for mixed-use development, where two or more different types of land uses, such as residential, commercial, employment, and entertainment uses, are in close proximity. Not everyone embraces this concept. I believe many people are looking at their needs from the perspective of always being independent, not thinking about aging in place. We don't want to think about not being able to drive someday, or manage stairs in our homes, or needing supportive services for activities of daily living. Compounding this issue is Montana's continued trend of our children leaving the state to seek employment with livable wages. With our small population and large land mass, we have the added disadvantage of not getting the resources we need through our federal government to deal with some of the larger issues like affordable housing and transportation. Despite these challenges, I believe there are options to improve every community's livability, even if it can't meet all the criteria. Each of you can champion community planning, which is proven to be cost-effective and what most people want. It will take community planning, large or small, to ensure that older adults can age in place for as long as possible. Here are some of the other ideas. Create a volunteer transportation program in communities and between communities where transportation doesn't exist or is very limited. Tools for creating a community volunteer transportation program are available. By getting better at compensating family members who provide supportive services to their aging parents, they will not have to step out of their regular jobs and lose income. Work with the city and county in your area to identify financing for affordable housing and other resources to help implement your plan. Contact your area agency on aging to see what supportive services they provide and talk to your state legislature to let them know how important funding these resources is to your community. Find ways to connect older adults in your community with volunteer opportunities that not only help solve community problems, but also prevent social isolation. In cities like Missoula, where planning is mandated through many entities like housing, transportation, health departments, and roads, talk to your elected officials about the importance of coordinating these plans in a way that the general public can become educated and involved. By striving for livable communities that put the needs of our older adults first, we will be creating communities that support all generations for many generations to come. This is Susan Kohler, CEO of Missoula Aging Services, and as always, thanks for listening.
Susan Kohler is one of several commentators on Montana Evening Edition. The views expressed don't necessarily represent those of this station. If you have a comment, you can send it via our webpage at mtpr.org or on Montana Public Radio's Facebook page. Montana Evening Edition is also archived on our website. I'm Corin Cates-Carney.
And I'm Conrad Scheid. Thanks for listening, and please join Edward O'Brien tomorrow at 7, 8, and 8:30 for Montana Morning News.